Hello and welcome to today's Heathrow results for the 9 months to the 30th of September 2019. Throughout this, all participants will be in listen-only mode, and afterwards there'll be a question and answer session. Just to remind you, this is being recorded. So today I'm pleased to present Javier Echave, Chief Financial Officer. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Hugh, and welcome everyone who has dialed into our Q3 2019 results presentation. I'm Javier Echave, Chief Financial Officer at Heathrow, and with me in the Compass Center in our headquarters, I have Sally Ding, Director of Treasury and Corporate Finance, as well as other colleagues of the Treasury team. So I'm pleased today to present a strong performance for the first 9 months of the year. As always, for all of you in the phone, you can follow our presentation that you can view through WebEx link, included in the invitation, as well as directly through our website. In terms of agenda, the plan for this afternoon is for the next few minutes for me to go through some of the normal areas of our presentation, highlights, business highlights, financial reviews, and then finally move into an update on our strategic action. At the end, I will open time for questions. So without further ado, and turning into slide four, I'm very pleased by the work that all the people working at Heathrow. After 9 months, we remain on track for another great year. And starting with some of the critical drivers for our business, traffic, we saw another period of growth after several years. This is the ninth consecutive year where we are seeing Heathrow traffic continue growing. In the period, we achieved a record 61 million passengers flying through our facilities. And that means a growth of 0.7% in comparison with the same period of 2018. Obviously, our facilities, you know that we have been full for many years. And despite those pressures and despite that in continuous growth, we are delighted that we continue maintaining high levels of service, which is the core of our strategy. And that's evidenced by the feedback that we get from all of our passengers traveling on time with their luggage. If we look at the financials, in the period we saw EBITDA growing at a strong rate of 3.6%. And this is a progressive improvement of what we have seen in the last quarter. And no surprises there. It's underpinned by cost control as well as growth in passenger numbers while we continue delivering better value proposition for our consumers. As in the same way that we did in Q2 in the half-year result, to enable a year-on-year comparability, all the numbers that you will see in the presentation today exclude the impact of the IFRS 16 accounting policy, and that's related with the change for operating leases that in 2019 would move costs outside EBITDA to depreciation and financial costs. That artificially would mean that our EBITDA year-on-year would be higher, actually would be 6.3%, and therefore for a fair comparison for investors, all the numbers I will refer today are based on a pre-accounting IFRS 16 and therefore growth of 3.6% EBITDA. In terms of investing, we continue investing in the future, and that we expect that to continue in the next few years. Obviously, part of that changing cycle where Heathrow will be becoming much more capital intensive means that we are proactively addressing that by gradually increasing our fundraising activity as we speak. So last year we already increased it, and this year so far we have already raised £1.5 billion so far in 2019. From a strategic point of view, no changes. We continue investing in greater resilience, better value for consumers and lower costs. And everything, obviously, related, making sure that passengers remain at the center of our strategy. And therefore, some choices we are making in the short term in terms of investing more in resilience and safety and security for our passengers are continue being a critical priority. Another critical priority, together with expansion, is climate change. You might have heard me several times that we strongly believe at Heathrow that climate change is the biggest generational challenge that all of us we are facing, and that's why we keep working to deliver a sustainable plan and putting sustainability at the core of everything we do. Consistent with that strategy, we have been very early supporting the government's approach and their commitment to net zero carbon by 2050. And actually, we are going a step further, and we are urging the government to help to accelerate the pace of decarbonizing industry by, among other things, investing some of the taxes generated from air passenger duty into accelerating a transition towards sustainable aviation fuels. And obviously, today I will discuss more on that. Finally, in the case of expansion, the strategy doesn't change. Expansion cannot happen at any price, and therefore sustainable, affordable, and financeable expansion, Heathrow continues being at the top of our priorities. Moving to slide 6, I will talk a bit more about traffic. And as always, the fact that we have been heavily capacity constrained for many years, despite that, we continue growing, and I'm delighted to see that we achieved a 0.7% growth in the first 9 months of the year. When you look at the different components, long haul remains the critical driver for growth, and as you can see in the slide, 1.9% on the first 9 months of the year. And behind that, North America and Africa continues being the drivers for growth. Behind this, airlines continue adding more and new routes launched this year to increase the frequency to those markets. On the other hand, on the domestic side and European side, what we have seen is a more flat or stagnant growth in the last few months. And one of the proactive interventions that we are doing is to make sure that we provide a pricing policy and some discounts related within our aeronautical charge to maintain that growth and stimulate growth in domestic as soon as possible. Obviously, domestic continues being a critical market for a hub, and that's why we continue introducing commercial initiatives, which has been even further increased on the back of the airline commercial deal that we signed at the beginning of the year. When we compare ourselves to other European hubs, you can see clearly in the chart that the fact that Heathrow is capacity constrained means that if capacity is not delivered at speed, other airports like the likes of Frankfurt or Charles de Gaulle will exceed traffic at Heathrow in the next couple of years. And again, this continues being the urgent need and the strategic need of delivering the expanded capacity of Heathrow at speed. Despite that, we continue, and despite capacity constraints, as you can see from some of the drivers, our load factors grew in the period to 80.2, and that means that we still have 1 in 5 seats being flown empty and Heathrow, and therefore we still have opportunity to grow, and we continue working with airlines to make the most of those opportunities combined with attractive pricing opportunities in the year to come. The other important element is obviously Heathrow being the only hub in the UK means that we are also the biggest port, and therefore cargo is a critical feature of our service provision. When looking at the number of cargo tonnage, you can see that has been relatively flat. And again, that's another illustration of the fact that Heathrow is capacity constrained means that fundamental trading links between the UK and emerging economies remain constrained. Turning to slide 7 and looking into some detail of our service standards, probably you know from the press and from ourselves and our investor relations communications that obviously in the last few months we have faced some operational disruption. Probably the critical one is some of the industrial actions we have seen in our partner British Airways. But despite that, we have seen that the service maintains at great levels. 82% of our passengers continue rating Heathrow as a great or excellent experience. And we keep working in terms of maintaining that. Despite stability in the last few quarters, I'm delighted to see that Heathrow continue delivering top quartile positions among European competitors, and we continue improving against the benchmark. The rationale behind this is obviously we continue improving facilities, we continue investing further, and more importantly, the type of service that we get to our passengers keeps improving. You may have heard me in the past talking about service signatures, and service signatures program is the critical success that we are now rolling across the entire organization. And behind this, the intention of this program is to serve passengers and delight passengers more frequently by noticing and caring their needs, sharing the information that we know, as well as make things better with a continuous improvement mindset. Let me move now on slide 8 to talk about progress on our sustainability agenda. Obviously, I started talking about carbon, but sustainability for us is much broader than just carbon. Hydro 2.0, our strategic roadmap, addresses all the needs from making Hydro a great place to work, as well as making the community around Hydro a great place to live, playing our part nationally in a thriving sustainable economy, as well as delivering in our global role on issues such as carbon emissions. Across all these areas, we have made great progress towards achieving all these goals. And let me flag some of the things that we have recently reported in our sustainable report. In sustainable, in August, we published our latest Hydro Fly Quiet and Green League table, which is a table that rates the top 50 busiest airlines at Hydro's performance and addresses their performance on 7 noise and emission metrics. And the aim of this league is to really encourage airlines to fly their greenest and quietest aircraft at Hydro. And the result shows that SAS, as the top of the airline tackling late and early flights, continues being a fantastic role model and a sharing experience with other airlines in terms of how to address and improve their operational performance at speed. This is not just about creating league tables. Backing this, this initiative is backed by ambitious commercial incentives, among, for example, charging 10 times more polluting aircraft versus a green aircraft. So what we are trying to address here is combine positive incentives while awarding and informing to the general consumers which airlines continue delivering the best behaviors. On parallel, another example, the Hydro Center of Excellence has been very, very busy and has launched several new trials. We opened the Center of Excellence a few months ago. And to name a few of the activities that we have been doing, first one is related with a recycling unit that could process up to 5,000 tons of non-recyclable plastic and could allow Hydro to recycle 100% of its on-airport plastic waste into airport furniture, uniforms, and alternative fuels. Another innovative solution is related with coffee cup recycling. You probably remember in previous results, John, our chief exec, John Falanquet, very, very passionate about the improvements in coffee cup recycling. And on the back of that, we have now launched our first prototype in T5 Costa in arrivals. So next time that you are in T5, you could enjoy a cup of tea while seeing how we are making coffee cups into pop, pour, drop, and recycle that cup for future uses. On the diversity front, we share with you some initiatives in terms of biodiversity. On our site, the Princess Lakes, we are delighted to see that they won the Biodiversity Legacy Award at the Syria Awards. The project was crowned by the improvement generated by the habitat management plan, which included the creation of new reed beds and establishing a woodland management regime seeking to improve the structural diversity of that extraordinary jewel. Many activities, but as you can see, unfortunately today we don't have plenty of time, but this is just a few examples. At more strategic level, in September, our chief exec, John, he joined the world leaders at the United Nations Climate Action Summit in New York. And as part of that, he announced that Hydro would join the World Economic Forum New Clean Skies for Tomorrow Coalition, which is another example of how Hydro can become a platform to build the coalition of the willing to find the right solution to address and remove carbon from this sector. I mentioned at the beginning that one of the actions that we are urging the government is to really invest some of the, or nearly all of the air passenger duty into accelerating technology. UK airports continue being one of the most heavily taxed airports in the world, and the government today is raising around £4 billion in air passenger duty. Our plea to government is to use some of those funds to be reinvested to scale up the sustainable fuels that this industry needs to really remain at the lead of sustainable aviation in the future. Continue on the topic of sustainable aviation on page 9. To lead the decarbonization of aviation, we launched recently our carbon roadmap that you can see on slide nine is comprised by four areas. The first one is to focus on modernizing airspace. The way we currently operate in the airport, airspace is very archaic. Technology and efficiency is very low. It was designed 75 years ago. In practical means, that means, in practical terms, that means that as we speak, we have holding stacks above our head that continue accumulating aircraft burning fossil kerosene that is contributing negatively to the environment. By creating a more modern airspace, we can make sure that we deliver efficiencies in the sky. In the ground as well, we are taking action to deliver more operational efficiencies. From as soon as next year, Heathrow infrastructure will be entirely carbon neutral. Some of the activities that we are delivering is we have invested more than £100 million in the last 6 years to make sure that we upgrade our car fleet in the airport to electric or hybrid technology. We are implementing more charging points to encourage our partners in Team Heathrow to also transition their car fleet at speed. So first activities related with modernization of airspace and changes in operations. Second is that we are promoting and investing in best practice offsetting measures and carbon capture. We believe that technology in the next few years will evolve, but still there will be some residual carbon that offsetting could really help to take it out from there. On this note, I am very, very pleased and very inspired by IAG's announcement recently to offset all UK domestic flights from 2020. Other airlines are taking action and there will be communications in the next few weeks about doing that, but I think it's good time to give strong credit for IAG for that bold announcement. Third area is related with sustainable alternative fuels. As you can see in the chart, 95% of the emissions that aviation generates comes from aircraft. And therefore, addressing the type of fuel that airlines build in the future is absolutely critical. We believe that in the medium term, the best option comes from delivering sustainable alternative fuels, and that will help the industry to reduce emissions from their primary source, which continues being aircraft burning fossil-based kerosene. The good news is that many of the aircraft that we have today in the airport are already certified to use blended kerosene, half fossil, half synthetic, and therefore next step is to create the environment where the combination of airlines, airports, producers, communities can make sustainable alternative fuels scaling up at speed. And this is where, again, the support from government by using air passenger duty in a different way can be critical to accelerate that transition. Finally, and in the longer term, and then back in terms of how we believe that aircraft should be fueled, the ultimate solution would be for aircraft to deliver new aircraft technology, including hybrid and electric aircraft. Today, we have more than 100 projects globally in terms of trying to be the first one to deliver the electric engine for aircraft. And it's one of the reasons why we encourage that research. We announced last year that we will offer UK's first electric commercial flight free landed charges for 1 year. Page 10. And continuing on the topic of sustainability, we would like and to deliver our commitment of leading this critical agenda. I believe that sustainability is not just for my colleagues sitting in the sustainable department. It's something that everyone at Heathrow, we are passionate of doing. And on slide 10, what you have is just one case study of how a department like the one I lead, finance, can also contribute to lead in this agenda. So just to give you a few examples, on the funding side, we are working to introduce ESG and link some of our funding activities to sustainable KPIs and set our margins related with delivery of sustainability commitments. Other example, in regards to pensions, I've personally been working with the chairman of our defined benefit pension scheme, And I'm delighted to see that he is actually encouraging all the investment managers in which he's investing the assets of the scheme to make sure that they invest in sustainable sources. From our reporting perspective, a couple of news to mention. First is internally, we have developed a relatively pioneer tool in terms of incorporating sustainability in our investment appraisal assessment. So going forward, human capital, sustainable capital, natural capital will become components in our internal investment appraisal valuation. And as chairman of the Hydro Investment Committee, this is something that is already used at Hydro internally. This is cutting-edge thinking, and we are delighted that we have already received some recognitions by the industry by moving this agenda at speed. Finally, procurement. I think we have talked several times that we have 76,000 people working at Hydro, only 7,000 employed directly by Hydro. So there are 400 companies, and many of them our critical strategic partners or suppliers, that obviously making and helping them to deliver sustainability becomes important. One of the things we announced a few years ago is that Hydro was the first airport in the UK to become London Living Wage accredited, and we issue our roadmap to transition our supply chain into London Living Wage by the end of 2020. We continue progressing in that. This is another great example of a practical use of sustainability. And other activities that some of you have been part, our business summits where we are linking Hydro with small and medium enterprises across the country, or the issuance of our plans for logistic hubs across the airport to deliver expansion and to share some of the wealth. So these are just few examples to hopefully you agreeing with us that Hydro continues being leading on sustainable, and every single dimension of Hydro is delivering activities in a more sustainable way. Very close with sustainability, obviously, is delivering sustainable growth. And when talking about sustainable growth on page 11, obviously we refer to expansion. I talked already several times today how heavily capacity constrained Hydro is, and therefore delivering expansion is not only critical for Hydro Airport Limited, but is also critical for the UK as a country. Having a strong hub airport, and Hydro continues being the only hub airport in the UK, is the best chance of the UK continues being a successful economy linking with emerging markets. The good news is that expansion is happening. We have delivered several milestones over the last few months. The more critical one, the one related with our statutory consultation that was completed in September. As we speak, we are collating all the feedback, which is quite impressive, the engagement that we have received from communities, to make sure that when we apply for our planning permission development consent order in 2020, we deliver an airport and plans that are satisfy all members of community and stakeholders. So I talked enough about sustainability, but obviously affordability and financeability continues being the two key pillars in terms of the delivery of expansion. On the affordability side, we continue working to see how we can unlock additional growth in the short term. And in terms of growth and competition and choice, we are also very pleased to see the plans that the Virgin Atlantic have published recently to become a second flag carrier at Hydro with over 80 new routes from Hydro. Obviously, this will help affordability because having a strong competition to British Airways, which is a fantastic partner, but having an even stronger second flag carrier will drive important competition and joys for the benefit of consumers. On the financeability side, no changes there. Always talking with investors, I think it's important that we re-emphasize again our commitment to make sure that we deliver on our investment grade credit ratings commitments through the entire expansion. And probably the next step in terms of disclosure of information, at the end of this year, as always, we will publish our December investor report, which will include a forecast for 2020. but also this year we will publish our initial business plan, which is the first step in getting into our discussion with the CAA about the next regulatory period, H7, starting from 2022. Now let's turn to page 13, and let me now give you some more color on our financial highlights, which is a much more comfortable territory for me. I think in general, the message of financials is that whilst our strategic updates are very exciting and fast moving, the financial side remains very predictable and solid. And that's probably great news for investor community. I alluded earlier to the higher traffic numbers in the presentation, helping revenue to increase by 4.1% on last year. Underlying aeronautical charges continue decreasing by 1.5% in real terms. But in the period, we have seen that aeronautical charges have been boosted by the recovery of a yield dilution that we saw 2 years ago. And that is also offset by the reduction of fares associated with the commercial airline deal. So the combination of all of that is the critical driver behind our increasing revenue of 4.1%. Again, worthwhile mention that all these numbers excludes the adoption of IFRS 16, which was implemented at the beginning of this year. That means that all operational leases previously categorized as operational cost will now be classified as depreciation or financing cost. For the purpose of this presentation, all the numbers, again, are excluding IFRS 16. If we were adding back the impact of IFRS 16, the EBITDA growth rather than 3.6% would be much larger, would be 6.3% to £1,459 million. Moving outside EBITDA and looking at net debt, we continue to have a very healthy headroom to leverage trigger events and covenant levels at all levels of the capital structure. And as previously mentioned in the introduction, we raised more than £1.5 billion across our multi-currency platform, which helped us to extend our liquidity horizon now to May 2021. In terms of the different components, the debt at Heathrow SP grew slightly faster than at Heathrow Finance, although this is more a timing difference. By the end of the year, we expect to remain on track to the outlook that we share in our June investor report. From a RAB perspective, our regulatory asset base grew by 2%, again reflecting the combination of both capital investment as well as inflation. So those are probably the key highlights. Moving into slide 14 now to give you a bit more color on revenues. The headline is that revenues grew by 4.1% overall, and there are two key components there. First is 5.5% growth in aeronautical revenue, and second is 3.1% growth in retail. So as you can see, healthy growth in both areas and both above inflation. So if I cover first aeronautical revenues, there are few drivers contributing to this growth. First of all, obviously, is the solid passenger growth that I mentioned, 0.7%, as well as increase in yield. So if I move to yield, we saw a 4.8% increase in aeronautical revenue per passenger, as you can see at the bottom right of the slide. And this is primarily driven by the fact that 2 years ago, in 2017, we faced some yield dilution that our regulation allowed us to recover or to wash up 2 years afterwards. So what we saw in this period is a recovery from cash that we should have charged 2 years ago. So if we were removing that yield recovery, our underlying charge would continue growing at RPI minus 1.5%. Apart from mixed, the yield concentration 2 years ago was driven by favorable passenger mix. So both things are the ones that are accelerating cash recovery this year. Also, the third feature to mention is that in 2019, we are seeing the first impacts of the commercial airline deal that we have announced a few months ago, and hopefully you are familiar with, And it's worth noting that there will be a much more significant impact on aeronautical charges from this deal in 2020 and 2021 as we start providing a material fixed rebate for airlines in the region of £130 million for 2020 and 2021, plus the volume incentives that we have built on that. So obviously that will be built in future budgets, but what we will see is some reduction on the back of those rebates. Moving on to retail performance, as you can see and mentioned in the slides, 3.1% growth. And again, I always mention the same thing, worthwhile reminded that we operate under single till, and therefore the more management can drive actions to generate yield from our prime retail space, the more affordable it will become aeronautical charges for passengers in the future. In the period, as said, retail continue growing, and some of the things that we have seen is related with management action, primarily on improvements on catering offers, but also we have taken advantage of the fact that the sterling has depreciated versus the US dollar, means that we can provide more and better relative value for international consumers flying through our terminals, of which obviously our retail proposition continues taking advantage of. Moving to page 15 and on the cost side, again, no changes versus previous quarters. We continue focusing on delivering cost efficiencies and productivity improvements while making sure that we prioritize investment in service, resilience, and growth. Similar comment about IFRS 16, excluding the reclassification of operating leases, our costs increased by 4.9% to £880 million. And if you were removing or if you were adding that adjustment, operating costs would have increased increased by 0.5% to £843 million. If I focus on some of the drivers and some of the choices we have made this year, we have prioritized investment to improve even further assistance for passengers with reduced mobility. We have continued investing and invested even further on drone defense capability, which probably you saw from the press that is an area that we were already well prepared, but we are investing further on the back of potential increasing threats. Also, in terms of security, is an area that we are proud to continue being the leaders in the industry on security, and that's driven by the heavy investment that we continue leading. And a good example of that is the new CT scanners that we will be trialing in the next month. And this will mean that you as passengers will no longer need to remove laptops or liquids from your bags when passing through security. And that will be the first UK airport to use this technology. In terms of other costs that we have incurred, we have continued investing to absorb some of the operational disruptions created on the back of the cargo tunnel that connects Terminal 4 with the central terminal area, and that was closed for connecting passengers for a few months this year. The tunnel is now fully back into operations, but obviously to manage some of the disruption during the year, we have had to incur in some additional operational costs. Despite this, the cost and EBITDA outlook remains on track for the rest of the year. Let's move to slide 16, and now at below EBITDA. So capital expenditure continues growing, and as we transition into expansion, we'll grow even further in the next few years. So on slide 16, you have some detail of the key components of our capital program. First of all, is our maintenance and asset improvement investment program remains in line roughly with our statutory depreciation and in line with previous years. And some of the examples that you can see in the pictures on the slide are things that we are investing. We continue investing on passenger experience, for example, our self-backdrop and self-boarding facilities, in this case, in Terminal 3 and Terminal 5, you can see in the pictures, as well as in making sure that we deliver whole baggage screening according to the best possible standards. In terms of expansion, CapEx has increased rapidly over the last year, and our actual CapEx invested by the end of September is £160 million. In terms of components behind capital expenditure or behind those £160 million, there are primarily two areas. First of all is continue investing in cost to prepare our submission to planning consent that will take place next year. And secondly, is continue to progress the design of our master plan. Some of that, hopefully you saw as part of our statutory consultation, but we continue providing detailed design as we move into DCO and construction in the coming years. Worthwhile touching at this stage that obviously the CAA is currently consulting on the regulatory treatment of Category B and a Category C pre-DCO. And it's great news that they have confirmed that these are in the interest of consumers and they should be added to our RAP. In terms of the final details, obviously we haven't seen final news from the CAA. And our plan is worthwhile reemphasizing that obviously our plan remains on track and can deliver runway opening date as early as 2026. It's worthwhile noting that the CAA is considering alternative scenarios with a slower investment in land acquisition and design ahead of receiving DCO. And obviously, if the CAA were choosing to move to those scenarios, that could come with a delay in the opening date. But as always, we are ready to go ahead and our plan is still online to deliver as early opening as 2026. Page 17 hopefully is a very familiar chart for you. And what we are trying always with this chart is to put in context the different cash flow generation, operational cash flow, investment cash flow, and capital cash flow. And as you can see from the chart, our strong operating performance over the period generated around £1.5 billion from operations. That was sufficient to cover our capital expenditure, external net interest costs, and dividends paid to ultimate shareholders. Obviously, as we transition into expansion, it's worthwhile noting that as we gather further pace with expansion, our increased capital investment will gradually exceed cash flows, and we will see that probably by the end of 2020, beginning of 2021, we will transition to a phase, a much more capital-intensive phase, where CapEx might exceed in the short term operational cash flow. Obviously, that's one of the reasons why we have increased our funding plans, and I will come back in a second. But obviously, we have been here before. It's also worth noting that in the next few years, the CapEx will accelerate at speed. In terms of cash capital expenditure, in the period we have £594 million, the majority of which was focused on maintaining and improving, as previously discussed. With £149 million of capex paid, in this case, in this chart, we are showing cash capex rather than accruals related with expansion. Obviously, the fact that Hydro is performing strongly allow us to distribute a return to our committed shareholders, and dividends in the period were £300 million. When you took all those components into consideration, and the inflows and outflows, net debt increased by around £400 million in the period to £12.8 billion. Continuing with debt, again, another hopefully a very familiar chart to you. The headline continues being exactly the same, which we have a strong gearing headroom and a strong headroom to all trigger and financial covenants across the structure and across all three classes of debt. If we were to quantify that, our existing EBITDA headroom to financial covenant at Hydro Finance reaches at the end of this period around £1.1 billion, which is a very solid position to have. In terms of different levels, Class A headroom is within our normal range of 2-3%. Although, as set out in the June investor report, we expect Class A gearing ratio to fall over the remaining course of the year to just below 66%. Equally, Class B gearing is also forecast to reduce by a similar amount, and Hydro Finance consolidated gearing is expected to maintain at current level, providing just over 5% headroom in line with our normal headroom level. So in practical terms, what you will see in the next few months between now and the end of the year is that we will maintain total group gearing at the same level as you can see today, although Class AB will reduce slightly, indicating that we are taking advantage of a Heathrow finance attractive market, and we are expanding this level of the capital structure first as we ramp up our financing needs for expansion. Moving to slide 19, we have made, led by Sally, extraordinary progress in developing our robust financial platform for growth. The debt strategy remains exactly the same and hopefully is now well-known across all of you. It summarizes around three pillars that always the same slide, stronger liquidity, better diversification, and longer duration. We have delivered across all fronts, and we have raised, as already mentioned a few times, £1.5 billion in new debt globally, with our liquidity horizon extending to now to May 2021. In terms of debt issuances, in our June investor report, we set transparently our plan for debt issuance of just over £2 billion in the year. When you take into consideration the debt arranged last year that will be drawn in 2019, together with the £1.5 billion raised this year, means that we have completed the majority of funding requirements for 2019. But obviously, with this being said, we do continue to monitor global markets and may access strategic markets in this represent value opportunities. So for those of you in the call who might be thinking to pull forward an extraordinary opportunity that we cannot say no, obviously we will always remain open to listening to you. In terms of funding, over the next 2 years, we will be transiting to increase our funding levels. So a few years ago, Heathrow had funding needs of around $1.5 billion. We have been gradually evolving that to what will become our issuance level in a few years' time of £3 to £4 billion per annum. Obviously, we have, you know well that we currently have presence in 7 different currencies, and we are committed to continue being a repetitive issuer in each of the currencies. Also, it's important that we signal to markets where we are heading in terms of next movements. We have mentioned to the investor community before, and it's worthwhile reemphasizing again, that we see that a key strategic area for us to grow in the future is a U.S. Dollar market. In the last 2 years, we have been very successful in terms of U.S. private placements, and there's a strong appetite and a strong feedback for investors to for a potential public transaction. So this is an area that we are ready to go. We will continue monitoring, and obviously, strategically, will become an important feature for us in the next few years. Obviously, before moving, always a great opportunity to see all of you on a quarterly basis and to thank all of you and your institutions for the extraordinary support that you continue giving us across all global capital markets. And the best example of your confidence is illustrated in the fact that over half of our debt maturing post, for half of debt maturing today would mature post the opening of the new runway, which is an extraordinary realization of the confidence that you and financial markets continue having on Heathrow. On page 20, and wrapping up our financial highlights with our outlook, I have already mentioned, so my summary is that it's great to see such strong financial performance. We are on track to deliver the outlook that we shared with you at the beginning of the year. We continue growing in terms of revenue. We continue delivering on cost efficiencies and investing on critical choices to maintain service standards for passengers. And looking ahead, we expect our full-year traffic and financial performance to remain broadly in line with the forecast published in our previous June investor report. In terms of next few days, I mentioned that we will provide an update in December on our investor report for 2020, as well as our initial business plan ahead of starting conversations around H7 regulatory period. Moving aside from the excitement and fun of all the financials, let me wrap up on a strategic outlook on slide 22 before opening to questions. I think it's extraordinary, and I'm proud as a representative of Heathrow to be reporting such a good progress on all fronts. And let me flag a few other things that we will be doing in the next few months. Our vision remains unchanged, and you know, it's giving passengers the best airport service in the world. And the way we deliver that vision is through our four strategic priorities: Mojo, making Heathrow a great place to work; transforming customer service through our service signatures; beating the plan; and delivering sustainable growth. We have touched some of the things that we have done, so let me spend a few minutes on things that we will be running in the next few months. So in terms of Mojo and making people proud to work at Heathrow, I think it's now a great opportunity to mention that in light of the sad news regarding Thomas Cook financial collapse, we would like to invite, and we have proactively invited any of the airlines impacted for their employees to get in touch with our careers team to explore available roles. Now is the time to support partners in the industry potentially impacted by the sad news of Thomas Cook. And in terms of other activities, in September we held Macmillan Cancer Support Coffee Mornings in aid for the Cancer Support Network extraordinary work they are definitely doing in the UK. We also had a National Inclusion Week that celebrates the diversity and inclusion in the workplace. And looking forward, we are quite excited with the launch of our mobile human resource management system, which will become a completely breakthrough for our colleagues working in the frontline operations. Some of them have no direct access to laptops in their day-to-day operation, and having a mobile application that they can request things like holidays becomes an absolutely critical hygiene and engagement factor to make sure that we continue growing their engagement in the front line. In terms of transforming customer service, we announced that, and I have already mentioned that we announced that Heathrow will be the first UK airport to use new CT scanners, which will mean that you will be able to leave your liquids and laptops in your bag when going through security. And looking forward, we are hoping to hear a response from our unions on our progressive pay deal. So this is an area where we have been discussing with unions for the last few months. The latest on this point is that we pull forward what we consider a fair deal to our people. That deal is now backed by Unite, and they are in the process of balloting the new deal. So far, two out of the three unions have already completed the ballot, and on Monday, as early as next week, we will receive the final proposal. So we are obviously looking forward to get a successful completion of that activity as soon as next week. Moving to beat the plan, obviously I have managed to spend 47 minutes without talking about the B word. So in terms of Brexit, we have in place all the contingencies. The fact that I haven't referred over 47 minutes to Brexit means that we are in a good place. We have all the experience and to deal with operational changes. And the fact that both the UK and the European Union signed the contingency agreement at the beginning of this year means that we expect no impact whatsoever on day one. Obviously, there might be some confusion from passengers, and this is where we are working on contingency and with the different agencies to make sure that passengers has the best possible experience from day one. Apart from that, we expect to have as a business as usual day as possible. In terms of looking ahead on beating the plan, we plan to relaunch Heathrow.com, which again will hopefully you will see a much more passenger-centric platform, more easy to use, and being able to access some of the services that we would like you to enjoy as users of the airport. Finally, regarding sustainable growth, we achieved a major milestone in the expansion timetable that I have already referred, and we have launched a new surface access route to help achieving our targets of fewer passengers arriving to the airport by car. Looking forward, we will launch a further surface access colleague campaign to motivate our colleagues to use alternative forms of transport at least once a week, so we can gradually change the behaviors starting inside out to encourage access to the airport through public transport. So I will stop there. Hopefully it was not too boring for you, and hopefully that will give you a good overview in terms of what has happened at Heathrow over the last 9 months. If I stop where I started, is I'm proud to see a good set of results delivering on our strategic propositions and ultimately delivering the best possible value to consumers. So I will stop there, and I will invite you to open the line to address any questions I might have from people in the call.
Thank you. So, ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to ask a question, can you please press 0 and then 1 on your phone keypad now in order to enter the queue? And then after I announce you, just ask that question. And if you find that question has been answered before it's your turn to speak, just press 0 and then 2 to cancel. So any questions at all, please press 0 and then 1 on your phone keypad now. Okay, we have a question, and that is from BlackRock. So we're going over to the line of Alessandro Lascalia. Please go ahead. Your line is now open.
Hi, Javier. Hi, everybody. I have three questions. So one is on traffic. I mean, I understand that you see that as resilient, but Q3 was actually negative, I think, in terms of variation year on year, and September was particularly bad. I wonder if you could elaborate a bit on it and maybe try to extrapolate the effect of British Airways strikes. Then always on traffic, I understand this is probably negligible for you, I mean, in terms of financial results, but I was also noting that cargo traffic has been going down in a pretty material way in Q3 again. So we're talking about a 9% negative variation. Again, I'd like to have some color on that if possible. Then a quick question on your cash flow picture, the one on page 17. Can you explain us the movement in accretion and others, please? Because if I remember right, in H1 that was 200 million, so now it's 648. Why is that exactly? And finally, if you can give us a rough guidance in terms of the expected level of funding for 2020. Thanks.
Great. Thank you, Alessandro. Thank you for the variety of questions. So if I start with traffic, you are absolutely right. When you look at quarter on quarter, I think we saw a decline, and that's primarily driven by strikes that we saw from British Airways. Finally, we got 2 days of a strike, although the original plan was to have 3 days of strike. The third day was cancelled just before the date. In terms of the assessment that we will do at this stage is that we expect that we lost around 155,000 passengers in the quarter, which financially quantifies around £8 million. So as you can see, from a full year perspective, it still remains healthy growth. But obviously, when, as rightly you pointed, when you look at quarter on quarter, it saw a decrease on a year by year basis. In terms of cargo traffic, again, probably it's worthwhile reminding that we don't operate a significant amount of cargo traffic. So cargo at Heathrow is delivered through the belly of the aircraft, and what we have seen is in the last few years, we have seen really reaching its ceiling in terms of capacity. In the quarter, it's also implications related with the strike from British Airways. Obviously, British Airways delivers around 50% of the traffic at Heathrow, and then the implication in terms of tonnage that we have seen period by period has been materially impacted by them. Obviously, we financially, Heathrow doesn't make a revenue directly coming from cargo, but obviously it's a critical decision for airlines to deploy routes at Heathrow. I mentioned that in the last few years we have seen cargo reaching a ceiling, and obviously that's the fact that Heathrow remains a capacity constraint. And obviously if you link that with the fact that 30% of the traffic of the exports of the UK with non-European countries in terms of value flies through Heathrow, that remains a critical constraint in terms of the UK engaging with emerging economies. Your third question about cash flow and accretion. So I'm sure you know that some of our debt is index-linked debt. So normally what we do is we have a feature called pay-as-you-go. So we accrue some of the inflation component of that debt. In Q3, we have chosen to accelerate the payment of some of that accretion simply because it became it make economic sense. So when you compare in terms of some of the negative carry value that we hold in the balance sheet versus paying some of the accretion, we choose to accelerate some of that accretion payment as a matter of a good cash management practice. So this is just a timing difference. This is not cancellation of swaps. It's simply just a pure acceleration of cash flow as a matter of a good cost management practice. In terms of funding 2020, I think what I will say is that you would expect at this stage, what I can point is you would expect a continuation of similar trends of the last few years, of the last year. In terms of the specific details of our funding plans for 2020, we will include that as part of our December investor report, when we will provide a bit more detail in terms of quantum as well as the components of our funding plans for 2020. So if I may, please hold with us a couple of weeks and we will issue that in December.
Definitely. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Alessandro.
Okay, if anyone has any further questions at this stage, please do press 0 and then 1 on your phone keypad now. Okay, we have one from JB Capital, and that's Miguel Medina. Please go ahead, your line is open.
Yeah, good afternoon. Just one question. I think I missed a bit of that part of the presentation. What sort of information and what level of detail are you going to provide in this initial business plan that you are going to disclose at the same time as the investor report? Thank you.
Great. Gracias, Miguel. So I think in terms of we are, as you know, in terms of regulation, we extended the original Q6 by 3 years, so the existing Q6 will go until the end of 2021. So we are now approaching that part of the phase where we will start issuing our initial business plan to the CA and airline as part of the first step in the 8-7 regulatory period, which will go from 2022 to 2026. So if you have seen our master plan consultation, obviously we have disclosed the operational and design and capital plans, but in the initial business plan, we will start disclosing some of the financial dimension associated with that first stages of the master plan from 2022 to 2026. The CAA is quite prescriptive in terms of what's the minimum content of that initial business plan, and therefore we will provide a forecast of the key elements of the building blocks of our single deal, so traffic, non-aeronautical revenue, which comprises the net of both retail and costs. Also, we will provide visibility in terms of our forecast at this stage in terms of CAPEX, and obviously we will provide also some assessment of our initial views around aeronautical charges for the next five periods. So as you can see, we will provide a significant amount of details related with the building blocks of the different periods. This will be the first submission. So what you would expect is, following our initial business plan, the CAA will respond to that with an initial consultation, and then we will have a second, what we call normally our full business plan, that will be published at a certain point in 2020.
Okay. Muchas gracias.
Okay, if anyone has any final questions at this stage, please do press 0 and then 1. Okay, I think that is it for this quarter. So can I please pass it back to you for any closing comments at this stage?
Thank you. Thank you, Hugh. Thank you for holding us today. And thank you for all investors. Hopefully next time I'll see you, we'll be around the airport. Have a fantastic weekend, and thank you for joining us today.
This now concludes the call. So thank you all very much for attending, and you can now disconnect.